This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, listener-sponsored radio in Western Canada, and it's time now for the Animal Voices show. And let's kick things off with our little animal chorus, and we'll be right back to get things rolling. Hello again and welcome to Animal Voices, your weekly show that considers the welfare of the other creatures on the earth. All the other programs are for people, but this is for animals. And hopefully you appreciate the fact that there is a show somewhere that every week devotes an hour to the welfare of animals and considers both domestic and wild animals and how important they are and how much they deserve a good life on the planet Earth as much as we do. At least as much. We're animals, they're animals, we're all life forms on the planet Earth, and that's it. And they should be considered our equals. And we try and communicate that on Co-op Radio at least every Friday from noon to one. And hopefully you appreciate the fact that here on Co-op Radio we have a program like this and all the other amazing programs on Co-op Radio. And we'll take into consideration the fact that Co-op Radio needs your support. Co-op Radio is listener-sponsored radio. And we can only keep doing what we do down here if you do your thing there. We are all volunteers that you hear here, and we're all members of Co-op Radio, and we hope that you join us as a member of Co-op Radio. And keep Co-op Radio on the air. For 32 years, Co-op Radio has managed what would seemingly be impossible, having a non-commercial radio station that produces really good programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we do it on volunteers and on a shoestring, but we still need that shoestring. We still need you to support us and join us and help keep Co-op Radio on the air. This is your radio station. We are accessible radio. We are community radio. We are a voice for the voiceless, whether they be voiceless people or voiceless animals. And we continue to do this. But twice a year, we need to ask you to support us in this endeavor. So give us a call at 684-8494. That's area code 604. 684-8494. There are a variety of membership categories going all the way from $25 to $500, including the monthly sustainer at $10, $15, or $20 a month. You can pay by Visa or a MasterCard, and then you can just call in and take care of it all, or we'll send you a package with a return envelope, and you can send in a check, whatever's convenient for you. But the first thing you've got to do is head on over to your phone and go to those numbers, 604-684-8494. And we're going to take a tiny musical break here and get on with today's show. And remember, 684-8494.
Good afternoon and welcome to Animal Voices. My name is John Pranger.
And I'm Marge Adams.
And I'm Carl Luskin.
And we've got a great show for you today. We just to remind you that Co-op Radio is also on the internet at www.cooperadio.org, where you can listen online or access a one-week archive of our programming. And you can visit our website for updates on special events, and you can also donate there, and your payment will be secure, instant, and there are far less administrative costs for the station. So thank you for supporting Co-op Radio. You know, it only costs $1 a week to support Co-op Radio with a $50 membership. That seems like a drop in the bucket, and considering what you get for it, it's certainly worthwhile. So $1 a week will get you a membership and a vote, and you get a say in what goes on at the station. So, As I say, we've got a terrific show for you today. The first issue we're going to be tackling is traditional Chinese medicine, which has a long history of using bear bile for medicinal purposes. But bear farming is a relatively recent development. They've been hunted before, but until recently, they have not been farmed before. Since the 1980s, this bile has been extracted from live bears kept on bear farms and has been turned into a wide variety of powders, capsules, and ointments. But today there are many effective herbal and synthetic alternatives which can replace its use, and the bears on these farms are kept in excruciatingly cruel conditions where their suffering is really unmatched in terms of its acuteness and the length of times the bears are forced to endure this suffering. So we'll be talking to Pat Tohill of the World Society for the Protection of Animals. After that, we'll turn it over to Marge Adams, and she'll be talking about the Richmond Animal Protection Society and their taking over of the shelter. Because just recently, with little debate and a final vote, City Council welcomed the Richmond Animal Protection Society as the city's new animal shelter operator. That move severs the city's 20-year relationship with the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the SPCA. So this has been coming on for some time, and the council unanimously approved a 2-year deal with the new operator. And for the final section of our show, Carl Loskin will be bringing us some hot news on global warming. So we'll be back with Pat Toll in a moment after this. Mike, thank you. We have on the line Pat Toll of the World Society for the Protection of Animals, and we welcome him to the show. Hello, Pat Toll.
Thank you, John.
I hope I'm pronouncing your name right.
Yes, that's correct.
Wonderful. Now, this bear farming is a fairly recent development. Could you tell us a little bit about how that came to be and what the threat is in terms of you know, harm to the bears and threatening the wild bear population?
Sure. Well, it was actually, I guess it could best be described as a conservation measure gone horribly wrong.
Okay.
You know, bear bile has been used in traditional medicine in Asia for hundreds of years and thousands of years, actually. And
does it have empirical and proven effects, or what do you?
Well,
for some
conditions, it is seen to be effective. You know, I believe the modern medicine that's used in Western medicine for gallbladder is a chemical formulation that's somewhat based on the bear bile, and it does the same thing. So there is an alternative, UDCA, which is ursodeoxycholic acid, which is the active constituent in bear bile, can be synthesized either from bile from cows, which are being slaughtered for meat, or it can be produced chemically entirely with no animal use at all. And in fact, the modern treatment for gallstones is UDCA, and they often call it URSO, which in Latin means bear. So it is seen as being efficacious. You know, we can't comment on that, but what we can comment on is that even within traditional Chinese medicine itself, there are and there have always been many alternatives. I mean, there are some traditional classical Chinese medical doctors that didn't use any animal parts in any of their medicines, and this is going back thousands of years. So, you know, there have always been alternatives. In addition to the herbs, there are acupuncture can be used to replace bear bile for some of the symptoms that it's prescribed for. Tui Na, which is Chinese massage, can replace bear bile use. And then there's, we believe, about 75-plus herbs that can be used to replace Barabol for the various things for which it's prescribed. And we've been gathering consensus amongst the Chinese medical community here in Canada and around the world. And at last count, we had more than 30 organizations signed up to a joint statement that says that there are alternatives to bear bile, and because of the animal cruelty concerns about extracting bile from live bears and the concerns for wild bear populations, because all the bears used in the bear farms are endangered species.
Really?
And the fact that there are alternatives, Chinese medical doctors are saying, you know, people should use alternatives, and that's part of the message that we are promoting in the Chinese community, and we're very pleased to now have on board the Calvin Air Foundation, which is a recent development that we've announced this month, and we think that this partnership is going to help to further this campaign.
Tell us a little bit about that foundation. It's a very rich organization, I understand, from a private donor.
Yes, Calvin Air Foundation. Calvin Air is a billionaire, and he's a philanthropist, and his foundation, the Calvin Air Foundation, is a private and independent foundation. It's headquartered in Antigua. It has a charter to do charitable work worldwide, and they have several focus areas, the environment, education, social development, child welfare, and animal welfare. And, you know, that's fantastic, because how many organizations, you know, the number of organizations that are specifically dedicated to animal welfare, I mean, there aren't a lot of them. We wish there were more.
Yeah. Well, the bears are still threatened by hunting, though, all around the world, aren't they, in spite of the farming of the bears? Because the increasing demand is not able to keep up with the supply, I suppose, the bears are still being hunted, including here in British Columbia.
Yes, very much so. I mean, one of the ironies is that bears continue to be hunted, and not only that, but there's much anecdotal evidence, to show that in fact some of the users of traditional Chinese medicine actually will pay a lot more for an ounce of bile or a gram of bile crystals that are from a wild bear than they will for bile or biocrystals that come from a bear farm. So in some ways, what we believe has happened is actually the ready supply of cheap and abundant bear bile that's been supplied by the bio farms, because there's probably 100,000 kilograms is our estimate of bile that's produced each year. 7,000 kilograms of bile that's produced each year. 100,000 is the amount of synthetic bile that is consumed each year.
Right.
So I've got those two confused. There's about 7,000 kilograms of bile that's produced each year, and because it's so abundant, because it's so cheap, some people believe, well, it can't be as effective as what you would get from a wild bear, so they'll pay a lot more, and the more endangered the bear, the more they'll pay.
Is the bear bile also used for sexual stamina or other superstitious?
Yeah, we don't have any record of that, so we certainly can't use that argument as we can with the tiger bone, where that is the case, and with seal penises, where you know those two things are prescribed as an aphrodisiac. Because it is so widely available in some Asian countries, it is now being prescribed of late as a tonic in Japan to promote general health as opposed to relieve any specific symptoms. And that runs, my understanding is that runs contrary to the very precepts of traditional Chinese medicine, to use it in that way. It's also going into bear bile wine and bear bile shampoo.
Oh, my God.
And you know, this is all just due to the surplus. They can't legally sell bear bile around the world, although we've got several undercover investigations that we've done over the years to show that, the products are quite readily available, even here in Canada. I mean, we found them in 2000 in Vancouver and in Richmond, and we found them in Markham and Montreal and Toronto. You can get gall from Canadian bears that have been hunted for their gallbladders, and you can get biocrystals from Canadian bears, and you can also get the manufactured medicines that are coming from Asian countries that have come from the biofarms.
Yeah. Now, tell us, describe a little bit about how the bears are kept on these farms. It's a pretty grim picture that I see on your website, which is at www.wspa-international.org.
Yes, I got to tell you. I deal with a lot of captivity issues, and I'm sure your listeners are familiar with there are quite a number of horrific forms of captivity out there, from the confinement of animals in roadside zoos to the confinement of animals in circuses to the confinement of fur-bearing animals who are farmed for their fur, and there is not a single worse form of captive confinement in the world. Bear farming, you're talking about a bear that's put in a space, a cage that's about the size of a telephone booth that's turned on its side.
It's about the size of its own body, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, in many cases, can't turn around.
Oh.
Even in some of the newer enclosures where they do have some group housing systems now where the bears have a little bit more space, we're talking about the same kinds of conditions that you would see in a roadside zoo. We're talking about cages that might be 30 by 30. You're still talking about a bile extraction process, which is the same. So even in the group housing situations, they're still getting that bear into a chute and then closing it in so that they can begin the extraction process, which there's a couple of forms of extraction. The most common form involves a surgical operation to create a tissue duct or a tube-like passage into the bear's gallbladder through its abdomen. And they open that passage up on a regular basis with a hollow tube.
You're talking about a couple of times a day, aren't you?
That they insert into the bear. Sometimes the bears are the extraction takes place on a daily basis, or perhaps more frequently. Other times, one bear farmer told our investigator a few years back, we've got so much bile, we're swimming in it. And according to what the investigator had to say, I think in some cases the extraction isn't happening daily, but it's a very painful process. We're talking about removing a digestive juice, bile, which is used in breaking down food and is important for the digestion of that mammal. We're also the process of performing the operation in order to create the passageway that allows the bile to be extracted is extremely traumatic on these animals. Two-thirds of the animals die within weeks, if not immediately after the surgery. It's very painful for the bear to actually have the bile extracted, as well as to have that wound opened up and reopened up
and I understand
on a regular basis.
I understand it's done without proper veterinary care. It's just amateurish.
There is no veterinarian in residence at these so-called bear farms. As if modern factory farming isn't bad enough, but to even call this a farm, it really stretches the conception of a farm, because these animals are kept in cages. They're severely confined. They have these painful mutilations performed on them. They have these traumatic procedures inflicted upon them, if not daily, at least on a regular basis, in which the wound is reopened up. They often use like a piece of wood or something to push them up against the side of the cage. In the worst scenarios, some of the bears actually are fitted with metal harnesses or corsets. Like devices, and in some cases those corsets even have hooks so they can clip them onto the side of the cage to make it easier for the untrained person who's extracting the bile to do their job without getting bitten, and they sometimes have muzzles on the bears, and it's just really, John, it's really one of the worst things, and the young bears, until they don't actually begin extracting the bile until the bears are about 3 years old, because they want the bears to grow, and they actually are kept in slightly larger cages during the early years, but they often take these young bears and they use them to perform circus-like tricks and teach them tricks, and they actually bring, surprisingly, in some of these farms, they actually bring tourists in and show them, these young performing bears, and show them how the bile is extracted, and, they promote this as a wonderful thing that's for the benefit of medicine and mankind. But it's the bottom line is there are alternatives. It's a completely unnecessary process. It's extremely cruel. It's one of the worst and cruelest forms of captive confinement there is, and it should be stopped.
Yes. Well, I see that conditions aren't as foul as they are in chicken farms or so, but still, you put a human being in a cage that size, he would be dead in 3 days, I'm sure. Who could stand it?
When you see the videos of these bears, because obviously I've never seen it personally, but when you see see the videos that our investigators came back with of these bears, the stereotypic behavior is unprecedented. I mean, you know, we see stereotypic behavior in bears in zoos and circuses all the time, but, you know, these bears are almost uniformly just biting the cages, biting the bars of their cages, licking the bars. Their heads are bobbing up and down, weaving. They're rocking back and forth. They're biting themselves. They're self-mutilating. You know, this is an extremely traumatic confinement and traumatic process that they undergo, and psychologically, it's very harmful for them.
Carl Loskin, my co-host, is with Bear Watch. He has a question for you.
Yes, sure. Maybe you can tell us some of the a bit about the campaign by WSPA to ban the importation of this goods. Is there any possibility that one might have a hearing on Ottawa?
Well, it already is illegal, so it doesn't need to be banned per se. You know, the products cannot be exported out of the countries where it's produced, which is China, Vietnam, and Korea, legally under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, because all three types of bears that are used in these farms, the Asiatic black bear, the sloth bear, and the Malayan sun bear, they're all endangered species. So the products are illegal. You know, the enforcement agencies regularly confiscate this stuff when they find it coming in at the borders. The problem is there's just so much of it. I mean, the illegal trade in wildlife, I think, is second or third, you know, only to the illegal trade in drugs. I mean, it's either right in front of or right behind the illegal trade in arms. I'm trying to remember which it is, but you know, it's a very lucrative trade, obviously, when you're dealing in wildlife products. It's very easy to get these products into the country. A lot of times the packaging is completely in Chinese, and there's just so much of it coming in. So the authorities are working very hard. They do confiscate this stuff quite regularly. They do lay charges quite regularly. We're working with Environment Canada to supply them with a new test kit, which we hope will aid in their enforcement efforts. It's a bear detection kit. It detects a bear protein, and it can be used in the field, we hope. We don't know, because that's the whole point of the trial, is to test it and see whether it works. We've tested in a laboratory setting. We've done confirmatory testing, and now we're moving on to a field trial where Environment Canada and some of their partner agencies, like the provincial wildlife agencies in BC and Alberta and Saskatchewan and Ontario, will be, and Manitoba will be trialing these kits to see whether, in fact, they do the job. They can be produced very cheaply for about US $15, and once they could be commercially manufactured, because right now it's still a prototype, I'd imagine that price would come down, but that's much cheaper, even at US $15, than what it would cost to do DNA testing.
And it's wonderful to know. It's wonderful to know the wonderful work you, WSPA is doing, and you can mention your webpage, WSPA, that's to enforce the banning of this product, this cruel product, extremely cruel product, into Canada and enforcing it. On a somewhat unrelated question, I wanted to ask you, what is nature's way of why there are significant quantities of this chemical that dissolves gallstones in humans? Why would it be significant quantities be in these particular species of bears in China?
Well, in fact, all animals have bile. All mammals have bile. So we have bile ourselves. I don't know why the bile in a bear is particularly stronger and more effective at dissolving gallstones. I'm not a medical scientist. I couldn't tell you why that's the case. I mean, obviously, I did mention earlier that you can actually synthesize. You can take cow bile, and in a lab you can modify it so that it basically performs the same function as bear bile. All bile has some similar properties. I understand that bear bile is particularly effective at doing certain things, and that's about the extent that I know about it.
Thank you for answering that.
And we got one last question before we have to leave it, and that is that bear farming, of course, is legal business in China, but it's and can be sold, this bio can be sold legally within China, but not outside China. Is that right? And there should be severe sanctions in place in Canada. Can you tell us about that at all? Or?
Well, it's illegal in most provinces. I think it's only the Northwest Territories and Nunavut and I think maybe one or two other provinces that you can actually sell a gallbladder from a bear, and you can possess a gallbladder from a bear. And in most provinces, because of the concerns about endangered species and because of the concerns about bears here in Canada being poached only for their gallbladders, I mean, even the hunting fraternity, don't like the idea of that. It is illegal in most cases to possess or to sell or to traffic in gall products. Most of the provincial agencies are more concerned about the gallbladders from Canadian bears and a little bit less concerned about the manufactured medicines that are coming from the bears in China. I mean, they see that as being a federal area of responsibility to keep it out of the country. But I think BC is one of the very proactive enforcement agencies when it comes to actually policing what's being sold in the shop. And, when we have done our surveys of bioproducts in the traditional Chinese medicine shops, we did find a little bit less in British Columbia than we did in Ontario on average, and we would chalk that up to increased enforcement.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We have to end it there.
Give webpage.
Your web pages again?
It's WSPA.ca. We'd love people to go there and find out. And we also have a Chinese language website, which is in English and Chinese, called bearball.org, which is specifically about the bearball issue.
Thanks very much, Pat.
Thank you.
Pat Toll and the World Society for the Protection of Animals. We'll be right back with Marge Adams and the Richmond City Animal Shelter.
Some lovely Latin American music, Andean music, from the local group Ancient Cultures. Actually, next Wednesday afternoon, there's a special. This is our fundraising drive week and 2 weeks, and we have a lot of special programs as well as the regular programs. And next Wednesday, from noon to 3:30, there's a special on Latin America. The first 2 hours is going to be Noam Chomsky on Latin America Rising. Look at the politics of Latin America today. And then that's going to be followed by an hour and a half of music from the Andes in Latin America. And that's just part of what happens here at Co-op Radio during our fundraising drive. But as you know, all year round, great things happen on Co-op Radio. Wonderful programming, like the Animal Voices show and like all the other. There's about 80, 85 different shows on Co-op Radio every week. And it takes hundreds of volunteers to put on these shows. And it takes a lot of money to pay for the electricity and the phone bills and everything else. So we need you to join us at this time of the year. Remember, any donations and memberships are tax deductible. You get a tax receipt. Just call the phone room and tell them you'd like to support Co-op Radio. Thanks to one of our occasional guests, Dana Lyons, a great musician. We have some CDs of Dana Lyons to give away, including the classic Cows with Guns. We also have a wonderful book called A Stain Upon the Sea, West Coast Salmon Farming, with articles by a number of well-known environmentalists, with a preface by David Suzuki and an introduction by Terry Glavin. You can have a copy of that. We have another book called O Canada, that's E-A-U, O Canada, the future of Canada's water. So if you'd like one of those books or one of those CDs, you can have one if you take out a membership. Give us a call at 684-8494. Now, Marge, you have a guest ready to...
Yeah, thank you, Alan. My guest today is Carol Reichart, who is the manager of the Richmond Animal Protection Society, RAPS, as it's called. That organization recently took charge of the Richmond City Animal Shelter, a responsibility formerly carried by the Richmond branch of the BC Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Welcome to Animal Voices, Carol. Are you there?
Hi.
Ah, nice to have you on the air. Carol, your organization was previously known as the Richmond Homeless Cat Society. A few years ago, I visited that beautiful shelter, and I was very impressed. A wonderful plant and great quality care provided by volunteers, and I'm still impressed. Now, you have undertaken, I think, a much larger job, but continuing with that, the shelter, the cat shelter, and that in itself is very impressive. Tell me about the changeover that you have just experienced.
Well, Marge, we've recently been awarded the contract for the City of Richmond to operate their shelter. The shelter is owned by the city, and it was formerly operated by the SPCA. And we were successful in taking over as the operators.
Yes. Why did you decide to bid on that contract?
Well, we've operated privately out here for many years, and we were mainly working with the animals in Richmond, and because of the SPCA's policy to transfer animals in and out, it was hurting our work, and so we were keeping more and more animals at our shelter and not being able to adopt them out because of the transferring in, and so we decided that we would like to operate the shelter and improve our adoptions.
I see. So that you were really competing with the SPCA's imported animals for homes for the cats that you had been sheltering.
Yes, that was true. And more and more we were being called on to rescue dogs as well and other animals. So we just decided to bid on it, and we're very excited about the new work that's before us.
And I bet you're overworked, aren't you?
Well, right now, the first few months have been very challenging, and but we're it's not as bad as we anticipated. We're quite happy. We've handled a lot of animals, and of course, we took over with very little training. We just were basically the SPCA vacated, and we took over, and we're really, really happy with how things have gone.
So you had volunteers who had years of experience, though, in looking after animals, but always cats, I guess. I don't believe you had other animals in your shelter, did you?
No, we didn't, but of course, all the people that we're associated with are cat and dog lovers. They're basically animal lovers, so they were well experienced, but we did hire. It's not operated by volunteers. The new shelter is, we hired very professional people, and we have a young lady there that's worked in a kennel, a large kennel. They had over 150 dogs, so she's one of our main people. We also have Christine, who's a dog trainer. She's a master dog trainer, and she's on staff. So we have all very qualified staff over there, so that's helping to make it very successful.
I'm sure, yes. And so that you're not just looking after the shelter. You are doing other responsibilities like animal control officers?
Yes, we do. We take care of the animal control, meaning enforcing bylaws and picking up stray animals. And our animal control officers are busy pretty much all day and doing a good job.
How many of them are there?
We have two, one full-time, one part-time.
I see. Oh, yes. Well, Richmond is a big area, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's we have a skeleton crew over there. There's no doubt. We're not overstaffed by any means, and we do have a few volunteers always in need of more. But I think so far we're certainly satisfied, and we think the City of Richmond, they seem quite satisfied with the work we're doing.
And you've only been at it, I guess, about, less than 3 months now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's less than 3 months. We just took a look at, in the first 9 weeks, I believe it was, we handled 137 animals, those that came through, and we found many wonderful homes. As disappointing as it is to see dogs, mostly dogs and cats, surrendered because people can no longer care for them, and they seem to be sometimes dropped off a little too easy, but the rewarding part is the wonderful homes that are out there and available, and the good people that are looking. So we call it rehoming, and it's just very rewarding to place these animals in homes where they're loved and cared for and truly wanted.
I'm sure it is. Now, what animals, what species of animals do you accept?
All animals, everything that's domestic, even sheep and cows, and so far we haven't had any. We have roosters and chickens and rabbits and hamsters and guinea pigs, dogs, cats.
So you're looking for homes of all types at all times, probably, yeah?
Right now we're desperately looking for homes for roosters. We have too many roosters, and they're hard to keep separate, and so we desperately, if there's anybody out there who needs some beautiful roosters, we have a few of them.
Oh, yes. So you have to be a farmer, I suppose, because most cities don't allow them in the backyards,
yeah,
do they?
Yeah, no. We still have quite a bit of farmland around Richmond, so there may be somebody out there wanting some.
So you probably have made some changes in the policies and the operation of the shelter. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you are doing differently.
Well, I don't know really what how the SPCA operated, but first of all, we've completely painted the shelter and redone the floors, and we've had a carpenter in to build all new cages, beautiful big built-in cages for the animals, and we've changed the areas where we're housing the animals around quite a bit. So that's been a big undertaking just in our first few months. But as far as policy go, well, we are definitely, we call ourselves pro-life because, of course, there will come a time where we will have to euthanize a vicious dog but even then it will be, you know, we will call in other people. We work with other rescue groups, mm-hmm. and such as, you know, German Shepherd Rescue, Shar Pei Rescue, the people who are really familiar with the breed. And so we expect that it wouldn't be a decision made solely by ourselves. So we can't say we're truly a no-kill, but no cat would ever be killed for space or dog. I mean, we have some very elderly dogs have come in, and it's just out of the question. We provide all the vet care that they need, and the same with the cats. If they're able to live a comfortable, healthy life, that's what we will be giving them. So nobody needs to worry that animals will be euthanized. That brings another problem, though, that we do have, is we have to ask for proof of where you live, because people finding out where we are, we're getting calls from all over the Lower Mainland, people wanting to surrender their cats and dogs, and so we just can't possibly handle it. So we quickly had to realize that we would have to restrict it to Richmond people for now.
And do you have any other qualifications? They must be residents, I guess, of Richmond.
Yeah, we do want that, although we still hope to help and assist out of the area as much as we can. If people have, you know, assist in spaying and neutering in other communities, we'll still be open to doing that as much as we can and referring them to people in their community and really working with them. But we just can't possibly house. As it is, we believe we have one of the largest cat sanctuaries in North America, so it's a huge cost to us to take on caring for these animals for the rest of their lives.
Yes, and you do that at the homeless shelter. You take them on, but I suppose a lot of them do get placed in homes, though, don't they?
More now, so that was a problem. So our adoptions are definitely improving, and so we're very happy about that. That was one of our main reasons for wanting to be at the shelter, the city-run shelter, because the adoptions were not, they were getting less and less, and we were getting called to care for more cats. So
I see. Now, what about your spay and neuter policy?
Well, everything has to be spayed or neutered. There's nothing can go out that is not spayed or neutered. And also, we've for many years, since 1990, we have never turned anyone down to assist them here in Richmond. If you're not able to afford spaying and neutering of your own animals, we'll either completely pay for it, or we will, assist people in paying for the spay or neuter. So that, we believe, is what you must do if you're going to be a no-kill shelter. You have to stop them from being born.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you do have a fee, don't you, for a person surrendering an animal?
We do, yes. We do ask for a cat, if you're surrendering a cat, we ask for $50, and we think that's very reasonable, considering that many of these animals we will have to give a lifetime home. And for a dog, if the dog is spayed or neutered, we charge $100, and if it is unspayed, or unneutered, we're charging $150. So most people with the dogs have not complained at all about that, because it costs us about that to get them spayed and neutered and vaccinated and microchipped and get them ready for adoption. So it is a non-profit. We certainly break even on all our adoptions.
I'm sure that you would not make a profit in that business.
Right.
Now, I know a major problem in Richmond is the rabbit overpopulation, and I'm wondering if you have some plan to deal with that.
Well, we really haven't. We know it's there, and we've talked with the city about it, and it's going to be a difficult one. A big one is to start with the pet stores stopping selling them, which Petcetera has, and we applaud that, and hopefully we can get the other pet stores to come on board and stop selling them, because we believe it started with people abandoning their bunnies in the parks, and this is what has happened. So we're taking in what has come to us. There's many, and we're spaying and neutering, and we're doing special fundraisers for the spaying and neutering, and hopefully we can assist other people and just educate people that there is an alternative to not dump their bunny out there. But it is something that we will, you know, it's going to be a problem with the populating of the bunnies.
Yes, absolutely. The SPCA still does have active duties in the area, I believe, hasn't it?
They're still in charge of the cruelty, any cruelty issues. Mm-hmm. They're provincially mandated to take care of the cruelty issues with animals, so they are still here in Richmond, and as they're in every community where they are not now sheltering, they still have a mandate.
And private groups have taken over, volunteer groups, I guess, often have taken over city shelter responsibilities, haven't they, in recent years?
Yeah, in other communities, it has been happening. It first started with the District of North Van. I believe they decided to have their own shelter, and the SPCA left there, and then it moved to Coquitlam. They built their own shelter, the city of Coquitlam, and the SPCA still is there. I believe they have a shelter. And then Langley went to a private group called Langley Animal Protection. Mm-hmm. Then a few years ago, Delta.
My goodness, I think you told us enough. It's obviously something that's very quite common.
Yes, it's
surprisingly common. And we're running out of time, but could I ask you about your placement and your follow-up? I think that's so important.
Yes, well, there's a panel of three of us. We meet the people and go over their applications, and we feel we select the very best home, and then we definitely do follow-up contact, and we find most of the people that we've adopted to have bring the dogs back and to see us, and so we've had to do a few visits where we'd go over and check the home first and that, but we feel very satisfied, and we stay in touch with them.
That's wonderful. That's the way it ought to be, it seems to me. Now, fundraising, I know that is important, extremely important for your well-being. Could you tell us how people can be helpful? I think you have a thrift store.
Well, we have our number one fundraising is our thrift store. We have a thrift store here in Richmond that's operated by volunteers. We have a couple, Eddie and Marie Malinowski, that came out of retirement to operate the store, and it's been very successful. 100% of everything you give to our thrift store goes to the animals, directly to the animals. So we have that at 8120 Granville Avenue here in Richmond, and they will pick up. They do pick up and delivery, and also you can drop items off there. So that's probably one of our biggest. Then just private donations. We are a no-kill, and people wanted that in our community, and now we really want them to support us, because these animals do take care if we're going to keep them for a lifetime. So I just encourage people to contact us. We have a website. It's www.rapsociety.com, and we need volunteers, and you can get in touch with us in many ways out here, and just support us financially, because we are in need of that for sure.
Wonderful. It sounds like a really big operation, but with your enthusiasm and the dedication of so many people, I'm sure it's going to be a big success. So thank you so much for being with us on Animal Voices, Carol. Pleasure talking with you.
All right. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to an interview with Carol Reichart, manager of the Richmond Animal Protection Society, which now operates the City of Richmond Animal Shelter and the Richmond Homeless Cat Shelter.
Well, it's rather a melancholy thought. It's rather a melancholy thought that there are so many potentially abandoned animals out there and that there's so much demand for their services. So another melancholy thought is that a crucial part of the solution to global warming is not being discussed. We hear a lot about light bulbs and taking the bus, but what about another factor that's not being discussed? We'll be right back with Carl Loskin after this.
Some wonderful music by John Reichman called Ponies in the Forest, and it's about animals. We're about animals from the Animal Voices show. And this time of the year, we're also about money and asking you to help keep the Animal Voices show and all the other programs on the air here at Corporate. We'd like to thank Stuart Richardson, who just called in a few minutes ago to renew his membership in Co-op Radio. Thanks, Stuart, for joining the gang. We've had some other anonymous donations amounting to something over $200. So we've got people calling in, and I can see the lights lighting up now. If you call and the line's busy, don't worry. Just call again or hang on there. 684-8494 is the phone number. You know, Co-op Radio does not get money from big government and doesn't get money from business. You don't hear advertising here on Co-op Radio. It gets money from you, the community, the listeners, the people who realize how important it is to have an alternative, independent community radio station, a station that isn't afraid to take chances, that isn't afraid to give criticism wherever it's due, and because there's nobody paying us, no government or big business, we can say what we think about those people if we think it needs to be said. But we can't keep doing this unless you keep joining us here at Co-op Radio. Remember, any donation or membership is tax deductible, and you can pay by Visa, MasterCard. We gave away one of the CDs we had from Damon Lyons. We still have a couple of them left, and we still have that great book on salmon farming, which is something you would really want to have, I think. And also another book on water in Canada. If you'd like one of those books, tell the people in the phone room, 684-8494. We know there's people listening on the web around the world on coopradio.org. Why not give us a call? 604 is our area code, 684-8494. And I think I can just do a little segue over to Carl there. I think he's got something to say.
Yes, thank you, and global warming is so much is being said about it. So what we have in Animal Voices is, what I'd like to explain today is a statement made by Sir Paul McCartney. And he said, if you want to save the planet, all you have to do is just stop eating meat. That's the single most important thing you could do. Well, many people would think that is somewhat of an outrageous statement, and we've spoken about this before on Animal Voices, but I'd like to refer once again to a United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization stunning statement that said that livestock production is responsible for more climate change gases than all the motor vehicles in the world. Basically, it said that animal agriculture contributes up to one-fifth of the world's carbon emissions. That is more emissions than from all the world's cars combined. So that's why we feel that is such an important statement that that Paul McCartney said about reducing carbon emissions, and if you could reduce or eliminate the consumption of animal products from your diet. Well, there was also in this United Nations report, it said that livestock production was responsible for 70% of all Amazon deforestation. Then this week,
grazing or how is that?
Yes, for grazing. But I will explain that, John, because in this week's, a few days ago in the Vancouver Sun, it also said what they are doing is they're deforesting the rainforest in Brazil to grow soybeans. Uh-huh. Now one would think, oh well, soybeans, that's okay, at least it's green, even though they're using so much of the soybeans to feed the cattle. So
is that a natural food for cattle? Hardly.
Well, that's what
another
it's,
point.
It's a high it's a protein, and that's what they're doing to fatten the cows.
Yeah.
So, but this statement in the Vancouver Sun, which I thought was quite significant, it said that chopping down Amazonian rainforest to plant soybeans is even more damaging to the environment than using the land for cattle pasture.
Why?
So it said that the soybean fields in Brazil reduce local rainforest by four times as much as pasture. And that was published in the New Scientist, which is quite a well-known and authoritative magazine. Well, also to talk about livestock production and many of the side products that is polluting the world. Livestock production is polluting the world more so than cars. I'd just like to repeat that again. And it's what you wanted to mention as the other inconvenient truth.
Is that because of carbon-based fuels being used to grow crops, actually? Or to, you know, to turn them
right.
into
to produce,
fertilizer and so on?
To produce fertilizer, to grow tractors, uh-huh. to transport the items by
yeah.
sea and by air. And
Heavy gasoline consumption in farm machinery, which has gotten colossal.
It is enormous.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. But also, livestock production produces more than 100 other polluting gases, including more than two-thirds of the world's emissions of ammonia. One of the main, and that ammonia is one of the main causes of acid rain.
Very corrosive, yeah.
Ranching, the United Nations report said, is the major driver of deforestation worldwide. And overgrazing is turning a fifth of all pastures, we mentioned that earlier, of the ranges. Cows also soak up vast amounts of water. It takes a staggering 990 liters of water to produce 1 liter of milk. Well, not only that, and the Cattle Growers Association of the United States says it's some 400 liters of water to produce 1 liter of milk. But whatever it is, it's still a staggering amount of water
and waste.
Of used and often polluted water to produce 1 liter of milk.
Mm-hmm.
Then the wastes from these feedlots and the fertilizers are used to use their feed overnourish the water, causing weeds to choke all other life. And the pesticides, antibiotics, and hormones used to treat them get into drinking water, and they endanger human health. Well, we also have seen that this pollution and the rain going on these fields with all these chemicals washes down to the sea, killing coral reefs and creating dead zones in the ocean which are devoid of life. And one of them that Howard Lyman always mentions is so close to us is a 21,000 square kilometer dead area in the Gulf of Mexico, where much of the waste from U.S. beef production is carried down to the Mississippi. This report concludes that unless drastic changes are made, the massive damage done by livestock will more than double by 2050 as demand for meat increases. Well, thank you, Paul McCartney, for saying what you did about just stopping to eat meat, because eating fish, we still have another minute left here?
Oh, yeah.
And stop eating fish is also implicated.
The fisheries are collapsing everywhere, so let's have a moratorium on fish eating.
Yes, and the industry promotes it so much. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the fish production is, and, of course, the animal production is so much an intrinsic part
of our whole economy, which is so much influenced by the big pharma, which produces in many of these antibiotics, which they have to use and dispense on these pigs and chickens, which grow in such appalling conditions, unhealthy conditions, that they need antibiotics not only as a prophylactic, in other words, prevent them from getting sick, mm-hmm. but they discovered that these antibiotics actually contribute as a growth accelerator, a growth hormone. And of course, the same is for the fish. So what about the fish? Well, there was a University of Chicago study that showed that eating fish is as big a contributor to global warming as is beef. Most fish eaten in our culture requires energy-intensive, long-distance voyages for harvest. Well, the fishes, the fish boats go out there long distances. They had tow gigantic lines for long periods. And then even farmed fish require an input. Raising salmon, for example, requires some 3 pounds of ocean caught fish for every pound of salmon produced. Over to you, Alan. Yes. You have a question?
No, I'm sorry. I was trying to signal to you that we are running out of time on today's program, unfortunately, because you've got some very, very interesting information there. It's very important. You don't get this sort of information normally on the mainstream media. A lot of what you're saying, they don't talk about because their advertisers are the people who purvey this stuff, purvey exactly. meat and fish. You know, they're either grocery stores or they're people who package stuff up in plastic wrap or whatever, and so the mainstream media just isn't going to talk about these sorts of issues and what the reality is for farm animals and what the reality to the environment is for producing these farm animals. And it's quite amazing when you hear some of these statistics. It's quite incredible. It just stuns you, you know, and we don't know about this, right, because nobody's telling us about it, which is why it's important to have a station like Co-op Radio to get this sort of information out to listeners and to the world at large. So hopefully, if you're listening, you will appreciate that and give us a call to support the Animal Voices show and to support Co-op Radio and to support this voice for the voiceless and this voice in the wilderness that brings you this sort of information. 684-8494 is the phone number. Area code 604-684-8494. We've only got a few seconds, but if you want to wrap up the show, okay?
I will with a quick statement, and thank you, John, Alan, for mentioning it. I'd like to say, as a reinforcement of Co-op Radio, that the media is only as liberal as the corporations that do the advertising.
Right, and of course we don't advertise for the sickness industry either, which is another result of our habits of consuming meat in the proportions that we do. Ruining the world, ruining our health.